no might about it.
It's working. Okay, so I guess just answer the questions as you will, really. Just take it in turns or kind of jump in. It doesn't really matter. It's both relevant. Right, so I've got a few questions. Again, open to the floor. So when did you first discover artist books and how?
Ooh. I discovered them when I did an MA in sequential illustration editorial design, and there was a specific lecture and a mini project, and that must have been about 1994.
Jordan actually said that.
What?
Outside. He just picked a number out of the air. He just said
1994. That's it. Yes, it was.
Do you know, I honestly don't know when I realised it was
didn't
there.
Didn't you do the... Because you did the same course as me.
I didn't want a lecture, though.
But didn't George do a lecture on his work?
I was just about to say, I think probably it was on the MA, and I think it probably was a lecture at Brighton. Did we have to do batch production
there?
Yes,
you did. See,
you see, I think it came from a lecture and a project that was set on the MA at Brighton, which is called batch production, which is making a number of things.
Yeah.
And I think then we were shown some books, and then I saw, I think the first artist book, or the thing that was like an artist book that I thought saw, was Green.
Okay.
Which is a collaborative artist book done by the University of Brighton's BA, and it was absolutely
beautiful.
When I was
beautiful. On BA, so I
yeah.
Right.
It was, that's a long time ago.
So, yeah, probably around about 90, no, mine was probably 98.
Yeah, give or take.
So do you think it was because, this is not a question, but do you think it was because artist books weren't widely known around that time, and it was often
it's
where...
It's because the internet wasn't popular at that time.
Right.
That's why, because if you need to find anything, when we did that MA, we did it without the internet.
Of course, yeah.
So, of course, everything you researched, you had to go to the library for.
Yeah.
Or you had to talk to people for, rely on people coming in and doing the lecture. Now you've got the internet, everything is accessible. So it's difficult to know about it.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the turning point in terms of artist book for me was, I sort of knew that I was going to love it. Knew there were some artist books in what was the old art school.
Yeah.
But I didn't know where they were. I knew they'd come and gone from the library, and I'd seen bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And when I actually walked into that room and saw that odd glass, it's one of those really old-fashioned glass-fronted sort of bookcases.
Yeah, yeah.
In a locked room, and started to open these things up, they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. And actually, out of the 60, there were 25 or 27 left. Every one of them was a joy. Mm. I think that was it for me.
See, I think George Hardy's lecture where he showed his own artist books.
Yeah.
I did really like that.
They were the map books, weren't they? Things like that. Yeah, I think it was George Hardy, probably.
Yeah. That's good.
I'm not so sure he'd see himself just as an artist bookmaker.
Well, he does all kinds of things.
Yeah.
They were handmade limited edition books. Would have fitted in.
Atlases,
but I don't think artist book was that popular a term at that point. It was more people making limited edition books, handmade books.
I've researched into that actually, so yeah, I know a little bit. okay, so do either of you have any formal, I guess you do from what you've just told me, but do you have any formal education or training in artist books or book art?
I'll be totally honest with you, I have none, and I can't make books. But I make artist books.
Yeah.
So I have none at all. And one thing I would love to do is go on a proper artist bookmaking course.
Do they do them?
Yeah. And there are people,
there's lots.
There are lots of places where you can go and do that. and, you know, I'm quite jealous that Roz can make books. I can't make books. So I use boxes as my covers.
Yeah, yeah.
And my books all seem to be the same, printed out. They're controllable by me, printed out on an A3 printer. If not, they're maps. So
yeah.
I make maps.
Mm.
And I sort of make it up as I go along.
On my BA, there was a bookbinding course. There was a bookbinding workshop, and there's a bookbinding department. Really nice facility with proper rabbit bone glue and big cutters, everything. Had all the kit and gold tooling. So it had very well kitted out. It still just about exists. So, yeah, I did bookbinding on my BA as part of my, for fun, as part of the BA.
Yeah.
And then when I did the MA, I didn't do bookbinding, but I knew how to work the kit because I've used it in the bookbinding facility. Mm.
So do you feel it was that you kind of carried forward? You know, was it that kind of inspired you to...
No, I left it for ages, actually, until I did a PhD, because I just went through more traditional illustration, freelance illustration. And it was when I did a PhD and I had to resolve it visually because of the practice-based nature of it, and I figured it would be better to resolve it as a series of multiple or artist books.
Oh, okay.
So, funnily enough, it was because of my MA, I'd done separate illustrations.
So it was
a PhD that made me.
So it was because you were looking for an answer that you've kind of theorised of that.
Yeah, so the first ones I made were for that, pretty much, which was 2003.
Okay.
I mean, I've dabbled before, but that's when I made this properly.
It's interesting because actually, when I look back at my BA, which was pure typography, we had to make booklets. We were constantly having to hand render and make booklets of some sort.
Yeah, see, I've done leaflets and books, but I've not done an artist.
But it is a sort of minor step towards it.
Mm.
But I think the fun of making artist books and not having that sort of traditional background or training in it is that you do have to battle because you have concepts that you have to solve.
Mm.
And I've made big mistakes. Like I know that the covers to my maps are out of completely the wrong paper. And I still haven't solved the problem of it.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure that even if you make one, you're happy always with what you've got at the end. You have a complete thing. The other thing for me is that they're never perfect. And because I am a graphic designer, I get very far. And I can remember showing something to Jackie and saying, but it doesn't, it's out by like a millimetre. And Jackie says to me, but it's a handmade book, that's the whole point.
Yeah, it's a one-off, isn't it?
And it is that having to sort of learn to live with what you make.
When you're starting out, you want to have a published book. And so you do it because it's a version of a published book.
Yeah.
And it takes a while for you to realise that it's not a published book, it's something different.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember, when we did our degrees and when I did my MA, I didn't have a computer. If you wanted to go and use a computer, you had to go into a sealed room and use a Quantel paint box. So anything that had to be made properly by hand.
Yeah.
You know, and when I look back now, that seems alarming.
And it was, I mean, even down to, you know, I was saying to Jackie the other day,
cut a rubber stamp.
If we had to hand render type,
or
you had to go and set it laboriously in the type room. Yeah.
And I hand wrote my dissertation.
Yeah.
And it got handed in as hand wrote.
And the weird thing is that the first thing that came out was a typewriter that had all the typefaces on what looked like little golf balls, and you would put them in. And you would type onto paper, and it would type a typeface.
God.
But they were really expensive. So our department of maybe 100 students, there were maybe two you'd have to queue or sign to get on them. And it was to save you going in the type room.
So it has been more sort of printmaking orientated. Yeah. Screen print and etching. It was an easier way of binding things together. So funny enough, our book binding back then was more about bringing together a series of etchings and bringing together a series of screen prints.
Right.
Whereas actually, with computers later, the democratization was amazing. It's like you could suddenly do everything.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, I can do anything I want now.
And I think for us, we then realised, once we got this sort of stuff together, how Artist Book became a unit, really, through finding those books, in a way, didn't it?
And wanting to do a project with literature as well.
Yeah.
Is that the books that you showed in there before, the ones?
No, there were 26 of them, and I'd be hard pushed to tell you now which the 26 were.
Yeah, you said the original being found, yeah.
But really, you know, when you think, that was a catalyst to all sorts of things, really. And I didn't know that I was ever going to be able to keep them.
Yeah.
And certainly not start up a collection.
Then after that, we started collecting the zines as well, so we've now got lots of stuff, you see.
Okay. Before undertaking the process of creating an artist book, how would you gain inspiration and determine a theme to base the book on? So what would you usually, how would you expose yourself, you know?
All of the books that I've made are based around my theme or my subject of the PhD, which was maps.
Okay.
So all of mine will have elements of map ness within them,
as in just the look of a map, or would it be a certain area that you visited, or, you know, is it something that's inspired you, like you've been to a certain part of the world which has a particular, you know, like with gradients and things like that? Is that what did it?
I don't quite know why I picked maps, just because I really like them. I mean, if I tell you what I've actually written in the PhD, it was because I actually like colouring in maps at school.
Right.
But when I got to the artist books, what you're trying to do is make a book that looks at one very small, tiny theme within that. So one was about tone, colour, and line in maps. Mm. Not using anything from a map, trying to convince somebody that they're looking at something to do with maps. Yeah.
Mm.
But how you do that, and how I decided to have three books that made one, I can't remember.
I do all sorts. I keep sketchbooks, and I carry them around all the time, and I write ideas down. And so sometimes it will be because I've read something, like I read the Dickens book, Our Mutual Friend, when we were doing a Dickens project. And it was great, and I loved it, so that inspired me to make something. And then other times I'll be reading, again, a lot of books, I do read a lot of books, or I'll see something on TV, or I'll go to an exhibition. And sometimes there's reoccurring things, like I like Heaven and Hell, and I like, not religious, but I like Heaven and Hell. And I like sort of the devils and the monsters, and I like anxiety and humour and satire, and they will kind of bubble for a while. And at the moment I've got about 7 or 8 things on the go, and then at some point the idea will click and then I'll make it.
Right.
But they fester for quite a while before I then make them.
And sketchbooks are vital, to be honest with you.
They are for me, definitely.
Because if I look at all of mine, it was interesting because I look at my sketchbooks and see the drawings of what I want, and then I see the book and it's so close.
Mm.
And often they're not. And so this idea of sort of the idea coming together in a sketchbook is, for me, vital.
I have to write it down somewhere. So yeah. Either on the iPad, and I've tried writing it, doing it digitally, and it sort of works, actually. And then I write it in the sketchbook, but I need to be carrying something around.
Well, that's why I've got that little book. My little book.
Yeah.
If I read my little books from a couple of projects ago, I wouldn't know what I was talking about, but it's at that point in time, I think, God, yeah.
See, and I do get back to them, actually, as well. I go back to older ones. And I kind of look through to see what I've done. And sometimes there would be good ideas that I couldn't resolve at that point. But now when I look back, I think, actually, I know how to resolve that now.
Yeah.
So I'll go and pick up an idea from maybe 5 years ago, you know, or write things down thinking, when I've got time or whatever, I'll figure that one out.
Mm.
And they do. They float around. Mm. And then I finish one. Because the one I've just finished, which I've got the one I showed the little
baby. Yeah.
That's been floating around for years because I went to Berlin 8 or 10 years ago. Yeah. I had pictures and I've been faffing around with it since then. And then suddenly I thought, yeah, I know how to do that now.
I didn't say in the tutorial, but I went to Berlin with the Access course, and I had an amazing time. I've never been to Bauhaus before,
yeah.
And I went to Bauhaus, and I just basically stood. I just kind of stood there and just looked at all these lines, and I just...
Oh, no, it's great. Great place.
Yeah. Great architecture. Very clean as well.
Yeah. But sometimes it's like I will be taking photographs of things that I know I'll be using later. So I always take pictures of mannequins or shop dummies or things like that. And I know at some point I'll do something with them. And scaffolding. I've got a lot of pictures of scaffolding that at some point I'll do something with. In the Berlin one, I had a lot of pipes and cranes. And I thought at some point I'll have enough pipes and cranes. And it's almost like I've got folders labelled ready for stuff. And newspaper headlines.
It's really strange.
Bad repairs. I've got a collection of terrible repairs. And I've got enough of them. But it is a matter of time to build up enough material to
work. That's so strange. It's almost like...
What sort of media? Sorry.
That's fine. made me think... I watch Mythbusters every now and again. They've got literally thousands of little, little kind of compartments where they keep things, you know, and they'll be like, I'll use that later, I might need that.
Similar. But I do it with sketchbooks, I keep starting them. There's loads on the go, and I'll write the title on the front, and I'll just swap between them according to...
Oh, I see.
Okay, so I've got a withdrawn...
I'm nowhere near as organised as Jeff.
But at the moment, I've got a withdrawn books one, a Paradise Lost one, a Lost Magazine covers one, and there's a couple of others, I can't remember what they are, but again, they're sort of floating, ready to do.
That's brilliant. Okay, so when creating your artist book, do you base the concept on traditional methods such as historical techniques of making a book, i.e. pages and a front cover, something like that, or do you prefer to develop more innovative ways of presenting the form of what a book could be? Just as an example, Rauschenberg using 6 lithographs on plexiglass mounted in an aluminium frame.
Mine, I suppose, compared to that, would be quite traditional.
Yeah.
They will always be very long landscape objects. They'll always open out very long landscape objects.
Yeah.
They're fairly traditional, I suppose, in that the pages work because they're tabbed. So you can read them like a book, but you can also see them as a very long object. And as I say, I can't make covers. So if I look at the two major books, the boxes become the covers that encase whatever is inside. So mine, I suppose, are quite book-like.
Have you ever made anything with anything other than paper or card or
email? No.
Okay.
No. I must admit, I'm more book-like as well, and I have noticed some interesting debates that have been going on in the past where people tend to fall into different camps, and it's either people that are mainly focused on the structure of the book as a book object and people that are more focused on the content and use the book as a vehicle. And I would say I focus on the content and the book is my mechanism of delivery.
Right.
Whereas
there's a whole set of people who
sculptural books
books. So they'll cut books and they'll and that to me becomes almost a piece of sculpture. It's just,
yeah, I'm not yeah. quite for so me, interested. That I like them, but I'm not so interested.
Yeah. I mean, I got one somewhere where somebody turned a book into a what's the thing with prickles?
Hedgehog.
And it is stunning. It's folded and it's just beautiful. The pages just open up like a. And I love them, but I don't want to make them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's things I like looking at, but I don't. It's not necessarily the way I would work.
Mm.
And then there was one in the Sheffield Book Prize. It was like a whole room was made out of a sculpture made out of loads and loads of books, and it was a book art, and it won a prize, and it was lovely. But again, it wouldn't be what I would make.
Mm.
But I like looking at it. So I suppose you pick your thing. I'm more interested in the idea and what I want to say, and then I'll figure out the best way to say it.
So do you think that's kind of come from what you said about the PhD, and like you used it as a vehicle to deliver the message?
Yeah.
And you've kind of stuck with that now because you base it on content.
I think that's how I make work. I have something to say and then I find a way to say it. Right. Whereas I know some people like structures.
And I think for me, graphically, books, magazines, you know, the physical printed art object is always an end object. So that's
it, isn't it?
Where I've come from. Yeah. So I suppose, and I do use quite a bit of text in some of them.
See, that's why I'm quite happy with the zines as well, because although they're very quick and immediate, so they don't have the aesthetic of an artist's book, it still gets the message across very quickly, so that suits me for things that I want to say quickly. And then on other things, I can do it in a slightly more refined way.
Mm.
The other interesting thing is that I don't ever make my books for anybody else. Ever. I don't ever think anybody will ever want them. I always just make them. I've made them because I want to make them as objects. Mm. The byproduct of that is if anybody wants to exhibit it or buy it.
Yeah, no, I sort of think about.
Because I was really angry that somebody wanted to buy this book because I only had one of them, and it meant that I was going to have to make another one.
Yeah,
and that to me was a bit like drudgery, to be honest with you. So I'd probably be quite happy to make one of them.
Yeah, it is boring making. It's the tedious.
And the maps. I remember the woman in America saying, "Have you got another? How many have you got in this edition?" And me lying to her and saying, "There's 20." And she said, "Can you send me 10 over?" Oh no, you know, because I had to then sit down and laboriously make another 10 of these things. So that's really interesting. I suppose that says something about me. I'm not so sure that I actually enjoy the making.
No, I think George said the same thing.
Yeah.
He actually said he loves coming up with the idea and then gets quite bored at making multiples of things. That's why you want a book by
I'd like a little, a little pixie at home that will make them for me.
Which is funny, so it does affect how I design the book sometimes, because I think if I do think in editions of 20, and I do plan that.
Yeah, they've got to be fairly simple.
I don't want to be making anything too complicated.
I guess it's kind of like this, this really. I'm not looking forward to typing it up, but I'm enjoying this at the moment.
Yeah,
you might not need to type it, you could just have it as an audio.
Yeah.
I'll edit that bit.
Yeah, have it as podcast.
Yeah, it's great, that's a great shout. There you go. I didn't think of that.
There you go.
Professional practice.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Do you have any preference to the materials, themes or techniques that you use in your work? If so, what are these? I guess you've kind of...
Mine is actually, I suppose I've got two now, because funnily enough, one is about maps and the elements of maps. But actually, the maps that I make aren't, they're about words. They're not about, the map is the vehicle.
Yeah.
Trying to make you believe that you're looking at something that's a map. But actually, the thing I'm most interested in is the word that I'm mapping.
So what are you communicating through that vehicle then?
I'm trying to communicate that you could map physically with a set of maps, the whole of the thesaurus. You'd probably have to have 50 rooms to keep it in, but it's a different way of looking at a thesaurus, because each one is mapped with a topography to it. So even down to the bits at the bottom, it looks just like an Ordnance Survey map. So I'm trying to make you believe that I've mapped a word.
Right.
And I've tested all two, actually. I've actually more, but yeah, I've tested two words.
Mine tends to boil down to modern life is rubbish, generally, I think. I suppose ultimately to the thing you communicate is if you laugh about things, life is better. So stress and anxiety can be taken away by having an amusing look at things. And if it changes your opinion on something by lampooning it, then I think. So I do tend to take a more satirical approach.
So you'd say it's probably pissed out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. As indeed I do verbally. But yeah, I think that's the idea, to make people laugh and then change your point of view.
And in regards to materials, I mean, have you ventured out in any examples? Or?
For me, it tends to be similar materials, partly because I like to control it. Yeah. So for me, the best buy I ever had in the whole world ever was my A3 Epson printer. Well, because it means that I could print bleeds.
You'd make A4 up to A4.
I could print bleeds. It meant that I could not have someone telling me what paper I could and couldn't use through the printer. If I could put weird things through it, I could make stickers, I could do all sorts of things. So for me, it wasn't to do with papers, actually. That printer gave me the best freedom.
But printers are the path to unhappiness, and they will push you what they really do. It's just like, I don't know anyone who wants to not throw a printer out of the window.
I couldn't have made my books without mine. No, I've loved mine, and mine's just gone down after 10 years.
You've got the splashy one.
I have got the splashy one that Duffy's got. But there is something about production for me where I have to have my maps printed over in the computer room, and I find that really quite difficult, that it's out of my control.
No, I like to do everything myself.
And that is a difficulty and probably a bit of a problem, really. But I like having my own printer. She's right, they do sort of drive you nuts. But
if you could just get a printer that would print in the centre of the page properly without having a big board at the bottom, I mean, I would be happy. And I've had a few debates with people online where we've all had the same thing, where printers are set out to make you mad. But when they work, it's lovely to have. Again, I like the same materials. I like kind of basic things like cartridge paper and exercise book type cloth and stationery cards, so it's kind of things that are readily available. You know, and I do like stationery shops for that. But then I've played around with a laser cutter and various things, and I like book cloth.
Yeah.
You know, so I've tried a few other bits and bobs. I guess... like an element of novelty, if possible, because I think that makes it different to a book that you buy in a bookshop.
Yeah, just as an example, I can't remember what it was called, but you were explaining about how Jackie always picks the best cover, and what was it, the fish and chip thing? And I thought that was amazing, just because I thought that's exactly what it kind of encapsulates.
Oh, I didn't big Jackie up in my lecture, did I? Damn it!
that's the impression
I got.
I like
the chip book. I'm pleased with the chip book.
But there have been others, and I remember you looking for that. Do you remember we were walking across that flooring? It was like metal. It had a sort of ridge in it.
We got that in.
And we were somewhere and going, well, that's it! And there is that.
Yeah.
And
that's perfect.
It was a sort of
Barley pattern sticker.
Yeah, massive moment, wasn't it?
It was, sort of a vinyl. But then I'll buy a lot of stuff and leave it sitting around. I've got some really nice sort of wood grain vinyl that I know I'll use at some point, but there's no idea to match it. So I have a house full of stuff, and I think you end up with a house full of stuff that you think at some point I will have a use for that.
I've recently bought an industrial... stainless steel industrial shelving unit. I've got a back room that I basically have as my little studio now, and it's just now filled with little things that I've just slowly picked up and just put down and thought, oh, that's lovely, I'll use that later.
I've got a lot of stuff.
Interesting.
You end up with a lot, there's never enough room, I think illustrators are right next to being hoarders.
Oh, yeah.
That was the joy of you didn't come, but Lorna's lecture was her collections of just mad things that you have to have around to make collage.
And it did take me years before I could actually cut up a real thing and use it, because I didn't want to do it for years. And I've only just got over that now that I've actually prepared to cut up a vintage magazine.
Oh, I see.
Normally I've scanned something and it's not the same. You've got to
See, it's funny actually. I think it was the first project last year that I did that I was. It was about, I think it was identity, and I actually cut up something. It was like a letter to my dad, and because I wanted to use identity, I cut out me writing like dad for one of the first times, and I was like, oh god.
Yeah, that's... no, it is. It's hard.
But then I looked and I thought, there's a lot of that, so okay, I don't mind one of them. And I thought I couldn't just redo it now because it's not the same, you know.
No, it isn't the same. It matters to you. No one else looking at it will ever know, but it matters to you.
Yeah. Brilliant. Right. Okay. Penultimate. Although you've developed and created a number of artist books, would you consider this your preferred method of visual communication, or do you still like to experiment with other mediums? If so, what other areas do you specialise in?
I like everything. I couldn't give it anything up. I like painting pictures. I like scraper boards. I like lining, printing. I like everything. There's nothing I couldn't have a go at. I've not had a go at animation. That's the only thing I like. Everything else.
Over the summer I did the course catalogue, and I have to say I loved going back. I really didn't like graphic design for a while. I thought it was sort of spiritualist, cold, harsh, and quite predictable in a way. And actually when I went back to doing this thing, because I wanted to make something and I had to design it and really think about it, I really loved it. So I think I probably could go back now to sort of design and graphic design with quite a joy in my heart. Whereas I think for a while I gave it up. I thought it was soulless, really.
I genuinely love everything.
Yeah. Everything. And I don't know why I felt like that, really. Whereas artist books don't make me feel like that. They were lovely and I love all the things about them, the sort of tactile.
The nice thing about artist books is that I've done books where I've used lino prints as the main imagery. I've done ones where I've done photography. I've done ones where I've done drawings and just scan them. And ones where I've used photo and illustrate. So in a way, they're almost like a little shell that you can back into.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
So in a way, I mean, I guess that...
they're ultimately flexible.
Yeah. So you can essentially use any medium you
want. Absolutely, and just stick it in there.
Which
is sense. Yeah.
It's true, actually.
And it's like going into an art shop. If I could buy everything, I could play with everything, and I see things and I go, I'd love to have a go at that,
Yeah.
You know, and I get really enthusiastic and I have to work there. And I really fancy having a woodcut because they always look nice.
Yeah.
I keep looking at them and thinking, oh,
well, as in woodcut as in to then print, or as in generally just...
As in print, yeah. So actually like wood cutting and carving and then printing.
And there was funnily enough, there was a programme on TV the other night about how they really did used to hand print chintz. And the guy got one of those beautiful blocks, rolled it up, and I was thinking, I want to press that on that fabric. There is something about that.
It's the tactility of it. Yeah. I do like working on computers because I do a lot, but there's something that I like about the smell of ink and the paper and the touch of it. And I think when you work completely on a computer, it's a little bit cold.
And I can't, funnily enough, if I remember trying to design a book, and it had been going on for like 2 years, one of these books, and it was really doing my head in. And I think it was because I was trying to do it on the screen. The moment I came away, I wrote a Peter Greenaway description of the book. I drew myself away and started to draw back into the sketchbook again about it. The whole thing got finished.
Really?
Yeah, but I needed to. I couldn't see that I needed to move away.
No, you can't
identify
it. I print lots of riffs out.
Yeah.
I make lots of riffs.
Yeah. That for me is a bit of a killer.
You've got to go to a physical object quite quickly and then use that to help adapt it. Yeah. You can't plan it and then just print it. It won't work.
And I love mini versions of my books. I like making little ones.
I think that's the thing. That's why I chose illustration, is because although I tend to steer towards graphic design with it, I couldn't do it on my computer because I just get so bored of not just being hands-on with things.
There is. It's almost like you just use one sense. Just your eyes. And I think it's not enough. I think you can feel a little bit. You need to smell things, touch things.
But I don't think you used to years ago. That was the sad thing, Because years ago you didn't. You had metal type and you had hand-drawn type and you had all of that because you didn't have that. Now that is sort of the thing that people keep reverting back to.
Yeah.
I was really anti that for a while. I felt people, because computers allow people to become graphic designers when they weren't graphic designers. When you spoke to them and they thought that, and you say to them, well, what's the leading then between that? They go, leading. And you go, well, you know, the spelling, they go, I don't know, it was just whatever the computer gave me. So in actual fact, they were even stopping making those really important decisions.
I suppose the photocopier did that a bit.
Yeah.
And they did it with zines, because it was black and white. It doesn't mean everything has to be black and white.
No.
It's still colour paper in it, but it's like that doesn't occur to anyone.
It's very strange, actually, because it was the other night... where I'm doing this course, and my girlfriend, long since graduated, she was doing some drawing of her own. And because she's on a computer every single day doing graphic design, she said it almost felt alien that I had to rub something out. Yeah. She normally does a line and goes, no, that's not right, I'll just get rid of that, and then I'll just make it. And
I've had the copy and paste thing when you want to go, I just want
to... Yeah, exactly.
That's why it's nice for collage, because you have to use the size that you've got.
Yeah.
You have to use the bit that you've got, and you can't flip it, rotate it, change it, tweak it. You've got to just find somewhere to put that.
Do you remember that student a few years ago? We had this guy who did some beautiful collages, but he said, I need a sheep walking towards the west.
Yeah.
And my idea was to sort of just scan a sheep, you know, but he wasn't. He was going to find the sheep that was actually...
But I think that forces you to be more creative. When you've got everything, you've got too many things to choose from, and you can't make a decent decision. Is that like Eccleston taking pictures? He just takes one. Whereas other people take like loads. And you think, no, if you can't get it right, you can't get it right.
Can
you?
No.
Make a decision, pick the one.
Yeah, do it.
Strange enough, actually, last night, I don't know if you've seen these, it's What Do Artists Do All Day? It's a
it's a
documentary on the BBC. There's been loads of them, and I can't remember what his name is, but it was Tom Wood. But he's just basically just took photos. I've never seen. All he did was take photos wherever he went. He would take literally anything.
Yeah.
I guess in the same sense as like building up materials, he would just continuously do it.
I've got the key. I can lock the
room. Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Okay. So final question then. Why are artist books important?
I don't think any art is important in the big scheme of things, but it's important in making life a richer tapestry. So, like reading a novel, it's the one way that you can see inside somebody else's head that's not you. And I think you need that for us to be an empathetic sharing society. Yeah. Otherwise, you would not be able to understand or communicate. So, although I think they're better when they're in collections and libraries, because I think in personal collections they don't do anything, because it's just like... you know, under your bed or whatever it's number. But when they're here and shared, you can see all these points of view from all these people and read them all there. And I think that's a lovely thing to share. And I think it's important for visual work, because usually the way we get information in this society is through text. So I think there's not enough of...
I think they're important. Certainly, for me, that idea that an artist can produce something which they can then sell, which is a thing of absolute beauty, yeah, that draws all of their work together, that I can afford, and they want to sell me, that I think is really precious, yeah, and it cuts that whole gallery shit out of here, because it is about them making something they love, yeah, producing it at possibly a price that I can buy it, and it means I then have a collection of their work, yeah? That's why I like collaborative ones. I think they're great. I think this idea that you can buy a book with 6 or 8 illustrators or printmakers in is beautiful. And I do think it's about you being able to promote your work without having this huge...
publisher.
...thing, yeah, or a publisher, yeah. It's wonderful. I just think it's such a wonderful thing for artists to be able to do.
I think if you look back to, like, the Fluxus movement in the 60s, I think a lot of the ideas for artist books sort of come from Fluxus, where people were getting together and they wanted to rebel against an art organisation. So, you know, obviously there's the gallery owners and the publishers, etc. And if you're not in that, it's very difficult to break into, because it's so expensive, isn't it, to hire a gallery, etc. So they were kind of trying to make things that were, again, partly playful and partly funny, which was unusual at the time as well. But also things in limited edition, and they did a lot of weird things. There was sort of screen-printed underwear and T-shirts and boxes with books in, and Tate got a lovely room of Fluxus of stuff.
Right.
And it's got some really amusing things in, and a lot of it's quite, again, it's quite jokey in its tone. But it's all very affordable, again. The idea was that they were trying to give art and art expression back to people, everybody, rather than to say that you had to be really famous and you had to be in a gallery and you had to put your white gloves on.
And it is interesting.
Again, it's democracy again.
It is really interesting what Jackie says, because in actual fact, that book, The Consequential Coastline, I love it. And I bought it, and, you know, I don't think it's ever been home. Because actually, it fits much more neatly here.
But it needs to be shared. I think it needs to be shared.
Because what am I going to do with it? In that case, I'd be better off cutting each one up and putting them in frames, so then I could get everybody who comes into the house to see it. Yeah. And it's really interesting, because when I bought the Flip Flop Profit book, to me, I thought, oh my God, the idea I could buy this book for 10 or 15 quid And I could actually cut it up and put it into frames and have this wall of neon monsters, yeah, would just be beautiful. But it isn't my book, so I can't do that. But actually, that's what I thought about. I just thought, how lovely to have these wonderful... And the idea that you would be able to go even into one of those places where they sell cheap prints and buy 15 that I loved for the money that it cost me to buy. Do you know what I mean? So they're obtainable. They're achievable for me to have, or collections to have.
Funny enough, I think sometimes the zines are more important in terms of the social awareness aspect.
Yeah.
Because usually they're people that have something they want to say, and they're just finding a mechanism to say it. So they're not as beautiful.
No. I think some of them are.
Yeah, some of them are, but it's not as important. No. The aesthetics is not as important. But I think they're people that would have no voice through traditional publishing means. So I think the only way you'd hear what any of these people have to say is you've got to go like that. And again, we've got some that are quite uncomfortable. But if it's about non-censorship and democracy, then you need a vehicle that they can do it. And I think the computer and the photocopier has let people like that have a voice.
Yeah.
And especially where some places that collect specifically either black culture or queer zines or those kind of things. Again, they're people that not traditionally had a spokesperson, or they've not traditionally been in the media. And I think it's the only way you'd have got an opinion. I think artist books are slightly different because you've got aesthetic values mixed in with that. So you get some of it. But I think it's important.
And it's funny because actually some of them, you know, even though they're mine, they're here, some of them, there are bits of them I don't like. Because being an artist, you're going to be like critical. Yeah.
Same things. Yeah.
And that's an interesting one. And there's a really weird thing that goes on with Jackie and I, which I'm sure nobody else has a problem with, but because Jackie and I have got the two next to each other, there are some in both collections. Yeah. We can't work out whether they're a zine or an artist book. And that's a really interesting. Yeah.
We can't decide.
So it's very interesting, actually. The cuspy bits are the bit I quite like.
And flip-flop properties, we were a bit...
It's really interesting as to where one sits and where one doesn't. And the cusps for me are sometimes the most interesting. And it's like that discussion about the nursery book. I'm not sure that is an artist book. I think it's a... I don't know, but I don't think it is.
Photographic.
Yeah, but there is something very interesting. What made me think it would be good for the collection is the way the narrative works in it. So there are always going to be those debates around books and zines. Where does something start and something finish?
A lot of photo artist book collections now, and that seems to become very popular. Yeah. There are quite a few people that do those.
So what do you think makes an artist book then? What is the difference?
I don't know the answer, really.
I thought zines were things that could be... I guess made multiples of. I mean, I know you can do that with artist books.
I think
books,
if you were sort of broadly saying it, you'd think most of the things here would be under a tenner and they'd be made in a limited edition.
Yeah.
Edition. Most of the things there would probably be over a tenner and would be made in one-off or less than 20.
Yeah.
Right. So, but there are things that are made in.
But that's a weird 20. Way to delineate two visual things.
But that's probably how.
But it's a bit like the lecture I give, which is I don't know. You know, I can tell you what it isn't, but I don't know that I can tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And certainly that isn't me, you know, and I've had to go on to write papers or anything around something that I'm doing with artist books. No one can agree. They can't even agree where to put the apostrophe.
But I think that's why there's lots of different categories,
I love it.
Isn't it? Which
yeah.
is why you have altered books and sculptural books, and then you have things that are more like, say, where you get more of a traditional book. You know, and that's what's
going to happen. It's like asking the question, what is art, really?
But you do, don't you?
We won't go into that.
No, but you know, it's as mad as that, in a way. Yeah, I can tell you what it is, but...
There's probably slightly more of a social awareness angle on a lot of the things, I would say. Because people tend to have something they are burning to say.
And that
tends to be more artistic expression.
Very interesting debate, because Jackie and I went to a sort of zine...
Oh, yeah, they were.
Me. It got really nasty. It really got nasty with these guys saying... Oh, all these bloody art students from St Martin's are taking over, who just produce these pretty books, you know, that they want to sell.
All my photocopy things that were renting.
Yeah.
But it's big enough for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, Jackie was sitting there getting quite annoyed with this guy who was dissing everybody. And when you went out, of course, there were tables full of art colleges selling zines that they were making there. But they had just as much relevance as his, just because they were beautiful. he saw it as sort of... throwaway pack, really.
As soon as he saw something that was attractive looking, he thought it was decorative. And it was the same kind of thing that you've had in sort of like historical or history and theory in the past. Yeah. You tended to have, if you've got pictures with it, it's somehow secondary.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's serious, it's going to be written in
just text. Wordy and textual.
So, which is why, as a visual person, you would have to write some kind of text description with your images. But if you were writing text, well, you would never have to make some pictures.
Yeah.
You're never asked to draw something. You're just...
It does.
As an artist, you always have to justify yourself textually.
It just makes me wonder, because, I mean, from some of the research I've done already, like Picasso doing some of his prints to accompany texts, you know, like a lot of, you know, they start off, I guess, as just accompanying a book before it kind of got about 50-50 and then self-publicising and things like that. It does, because I would still regard that as art, to be honest, if it's
a print. But that's why, I don't want this put on. Theoreticians, you know, they don't make art, they just write about other people's.
But we're in a very logo-centric society where everything is text-orientated. We're writing a CV at the moment, and we're both artists, but it's all text, there's no room to put any pictures. And you think, isn't that... Wouldn't you want a picture? And then we want to see a picture. It's had the same with PhD. I did a 2-hour talking about all the work, but at no point did people want to talk about the pictures particularly, or the sketchbooks. And think, that to me is the important bit.
Yeah.
It's changing, but it's... Maybe it's a very Western thing, I don't know. But yes.
Fantastic.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Oh, that was horrible. No. Having to think.